to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, you are here with another episode of Checkpoint Intimates. We are your weekly gaming podcast where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get intimate on a particular gaming topic. My name is Ali, joined in studio by Pedro.
Hi.
The one and only.
It's my first intimates.
The ultimate, the behemoth himself, the big dog.
I've got horns, I'm purple, I'm enormous.
Is this your first time?
Yeah.
Ah, fun. Popping your cherry.
Yes.
On this week's Intimates, we kind of want to talk about the relationship between crowdfunding, publishers, the consumer, and all of that kind of jargon that goes into funding a video game for release. Now, the reason this has popped up into my mind, at the very least, is because I keep seeing news stories about video games getting crowdfunded and then seeking additional funding revenues after their successful crowdfund. Now, for those who don't know too much about crowdfunding, I'll go over it real quick. There are platforms such as Kickstarter, that's kind of the big one, that allows kind of projects to be put forward to the public with a set goal. And the idea is that if the public like the product, they're going to fund it, put money into it, and that way the company, assuming they reach their successful funding goal, has the money they need to then create this as a product and distribute it and put it out to the world. That's the idea.
Yeah.
The reality, though, however, at least in the video game sphere, is that often crowdfunding leads to additional funding revenue sources. So, for instance, you might put your game on Kickstarter, get $3 million from crowdfunding, and then go and get additional funding from a publisher, and maybe you even sign an exclusivity deal that gives you additional funding on top of that. And it kind of makes this kind of crazy environment where non-traditional funding methods are being picked up and being accepted. And I guess we want to talk about the morality of that and what really is the kind of right thing to do when it comes to those forms of funding methods.
I think you brought up two big recent examples is it Shenmue 3? And
one of the most successful Kickstarter games ever, Shenmue 3. Yes. So this is a game that made a lot of money. And then I was also talking about Psychonauts 2.
Yes.
So Psychonauts, Shenmue crowdfunded through Kickstarter. Psychonauts crowdfunded through Fig, which is a totally different crowdsourcing website.
Oh.
And the point of difference using Fig is that it's actually more of an investment from consumers, and they can get their money back on successful projects once those projects make money, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's
but really cool.
Amazing in theory.
But one of the big news stories was that Fig investors, so the kind of consumers who put money into Fig, are already getting their payouts because Psychonauts, as a developer, the team at Double Fine, got picked up as a Microsoft first-party studio, and Microsoft is now like funneling money into the Psychonauts project, and so the consumers are actually getting their investment back already
before
the game has even launched.
Yeah. Do we know if there were any additional promised rewards with the Psychonauts on Fig apart from just they get their money back?
Oh, so yeah. Well, look, Kickstarter has these tiers where they will kind of give you additional things. So maybe you spend $20, you get a copy of the game when it releases. You spend $30 and you get a t-shirt. You spend $40 and you get the special edition with the soundtrack and whatever.
You got your name in the credits or something like that.
You spend $800 and you have an NPC character or whatever. Mm. Yeah. Fig has those kind of goals as well, but I think they're used less frequently.
Okay.
I think it's more about the investment, more about the money you put in and the potential money you get back out of the project.
I feel like as a whole on this topic, I'm firmly on the side of, I personally wouldn't get upset if I had contributed to something like this and if I end up getting my money back, and if I get everything that I thought I was going to get, then I don't personally think I would get too upset at that. But if I can see that if there were any additional rewards that became null and void after they got this publishing deal, and that the backers weren't getting any of those extras, maybe I can see what they were getting upset about.
I haven't seen an example of that happen yet. I think one of the main concerns, I guess, around this kind of funding model is that, you know, with Fig, it's okay. With Fig, it's an investment. It really is a whole different kind of ball game.
Right, yeah.
With Kickstarter, it's a donation, but a lot of consumers don't see it as a donation. Mm-hmm. And I think the whole point that it is a donation is a bit obfuscated because, you know, the developers aren't going to talk about that. They're not going to say, hey, we've raised $10 million on Kickstarter, but that doesn't guarantee we're ever going to make a game.
Yeah.
We're not indebted to you. We don't owe you anything. You've given us money based on a fantasy, an idea that may or may never come true.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, we may use that money to make a different type of game than the one we advertised to you, and that's within our right. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
And the problem thereby is that a lot of these companies start making decisions not in the best interest of the people who helped fund and therefore make this game happen. So a basic example of that would be a game like Shenmue, who was crowdsourced by the consumers. They raise a lot. They raise millions of dollars mm-hmm. to make sure this game happens. And then the developers or the publisher, Deep Silver in this case, who is also providing additional funding, goes and turns to Epic Games and says, oh, we'll sign an exclusivity deal with you, assuming you give us X amount of money for the deal. And they did that. And the consumers turn around and they go, oh my God, that's not fair. Like, we are the ones who made this game happen. If it wasn't fast, nothing would have happened. And now you've made a decision that restricts the way we can access and play your game. And it's not just that example. It'll happen time and time and time and time again, because video game development is quite volatile. It's expensive.
Very much, yes.
And so developers are going to seek whatever funding avenue they can get. And of course, every single time they seek additional funding, it comes with a caveat. Because every publisher, every, you know, retail owner, every platform distributor, they all have their own agendas and mm-hmm. what they want to achieve. And ultimately, it boils down to, well, all of a sudden, it's no longer this consumer-based product being made for the people who funded it. It's actually this whole other thing that is a bit kind of stretched in multiple directions.
What I'm thinking of is Shenmue 3 is the third game in this series. Psychonauts 2, you know, they're both sequels.
Yes.
And I could see maybe popular, you know, games like Mighty Number 9?
Mighty Number 9.
Which did not review particularly well.
No.
When it came out. But recently, Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night, which were games, Kickstarter games, developed by veteran game developers.
Yes.
People who did Castlevania and Mega Man. But these games were not so much big AAA titles. Those two specifically were not like big AAA titles when they came out. They were more, not so much indie games, but they were kind of,
well, they had their niche, yeah.
Yeah, but they were kind of lower on, not quite, you know, big budget games, but very clearly modeled after and had the, you know, the lifeblood of these older games. Whereas Psychonauts and Shenmue are already big titles.
They're already well known, established franchises.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm just thinking maybe they were worried that they wouldn't sell as well, or they wouldn't, or even with the millions of dollars they got through Kickstarter, if maybe they would be able to make a game of the same caliber as the previous entries in the series.
Right.
And so they thought that maybe the only way to get that was to reach out to, did they reach out to Epic or, you know, whatever?
Oh, it doesn't matter which way
it
came.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
I guess we don't know the internal workings there. Presumably Epic reached out to them, but once again, I don't know 100%. Yeah. But yeah, it's fascinating, right? And it's fascinating because of all the little ways it can affect things. Because if you go back, right, and you go back to game development and where it used to be before crowdfunding and before all these different platforms were vying for rights, the basic idea was, hey, I have a game, I pitch it to a publisher, they give me money so that I can make game, I make game, I sell game, using, you know, the money from the publisher, and we kind of split the revenue in whatever arrangement we've agreed to. And that's a tried and tested method of video game development. The other option was, hey, I'm going to do it all on my own, independently. Mm-hmm. I make it. I don't have a publisher. There's no money coming my way. It's a big risk. I might be spending a lot of my own savings to do it, but I get 100% of the revenue from sales because, you know, I don't have a publisher attached to it.
Independent.
And I believe in my game and that I can achieve that.
Yeah.
Those were the two main methods. And you know, it put all the accountability on the developers themselves, mostly. Because it's not publishers, necessarily, who are shutting down due to bad sales. I mean, sometimes. Like, for instance, the THQ famously shut down. Oh, yeah. But mostly it's development studios that are struggling. But then crowdfunding came along, and all of a sudden, there's a bit of pressure getting relieved, right? And the idea of Kickstarter, and if you read the terms of conditions, the whole idea is you ask for the amount of money you need, right? A developer walks into a publishing label and says, here's my pitch, I need $3 million to make this game, but I believe it's going to get me net profit and you get X amount, yeah. right? The whole idea of Kickstarter is, it should be the exact same thing. Hey, I need $3 million to make this game, and if you do so, the game will exist and can be playable by X amount of people, the millions of people out there. The whole idea of Kickstarter is you ask for the amount of money you need. If you ask for more than you need, you're abusing the system. And if you ask for less than you need and seek revenue elsewhere, you're also abusing the system. The yeah. idea is you ask for what you need. And I've run through this because I used to be a marketing student and leading into a marketing position for about a year. And I've been involved in campaigns and whatnot that used Kickstarter specifically as a crowdsourcing, crowdfunding resource for projects where a certain amount of money was asked, the goal wasn't achieved, so the company themselves puts the money into Kickstarter to get the goal achieved, even though they didn't need, they clearly didn't need as much as they're asking for because they have their own money already willing to be put into the project. Yeah. And that is a process that can make Kickstarter shut you down if they find out you've done that. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those kind of dodgy behind curtains deals that kind of goes on.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So
Kickstarter is very strict with how you're supposed to utilize their system. And they do it for the benefit of the consumer. So the consumer isn't getting taken advantage of. But we now live in a day and age where clearly abuse of that system is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
In fact, we have games like Star Citizen that to date has raised over $100 million and still hasn't released a game. Because at this point, it's less about making a game and more about funding a game and funding games development.
Yeah.
And so we end up in these really tricky situations where there's no longer the onus on the developer. Because there's no risk. You have $100 million. Yeah. Like, the ability to spend that money, it's almost harder to spend it than to not, right? Yeah. Like, you'd have to do something pretty drastically terrible and stupid to be able to spend that money and not result in a video game release. Yet we still have these situations where, you know, all these additional funding revenues are coming and games aren't releasing and these, like, blank periods where people go silent for years on end.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it feels icky.
It looks like they're shooting for the sky a little bit, don't they? And kind of overestimating the work they're going to do. It reminds me of, this happens a lot in big AAA companies. Final Fantasy XV took almost a decade in spent almost a decade in development. All these different, because it was backed by this huge company. They had the money to do it, but over the years, all these like directors got changed, the plot got changed, they switched console generations, things like that, because they had the money to do it.
Mm.
And so this kind of sounds like, without having the backing of a huge company behind them, finding a new way to get through that sort of process.
Yes.
Where smaller developers are making bigger games than what they could make before, but are now encountering sort of similar problems to what AAA developers
absolutely
are having.
And it's the whole idea of money creating problems, right? Because let's say you have a game. I remember this happened to Double Fine previously, the people who made Psychonauts, right? They were making a game called Broken Age, and I think the game, they just wanted to make a simple point-and-click adventure, but the game made too much money on Kickstarter, and they got so much money that they had to change the direction of the game.
Yeah.
They made something much bigger than it was ever supposed to be, and because of that, they ended up running into problems, and they spent all their budget way quicker than they thought, and they only made half a game. So they released half a game and then used the profits on that game to fund the second half of the game. and then release that.
Oh, yeah.
Broken Age came in two parts, not because it was intended to, but because that's how it ended up happening so that they could afford to do it. Money created problems, and all of a sudden, these guys found themselves in a position where they needed more money. But the consumers, all these people who put all this money into this project because they loved it and they wanted it to be a thing, the game is not what they asked for. It's not what they funded. It's different.
Was Cuphead a crowdfunded game?
You know, I don't think it was.
Okay.
I don't think it was, but don't test me on that. I'm fairly confident it wasn't. I think it was just a game that was shown at the E3 stage and got a crazy amount of attention out of nowhere. Yeah. And the developers were like, oh no, we're all of a sudden like have so much hype behind our tiny game that we need to make this bigger than it used to be.
We need to put more in it because that's what people are expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me actually of an example. And I kind of want to talk about this because it's almost like a new age thing, right? It used to be that you sold your game to customers, but in a way now it's not so much. Indie developers can find stability by selling their game to publishers or selling it to platform owners, right? So Ashen is a game that we played at PAX and we were looking forward to so much when this game releases. And we were super hype, and the game was gorgeous and looked fantastic. The game wasn't crowdfunded. It was all done by an independent team. It got quite a lot of kind of hype around it because it looked that good.
Mm-hmm.
It was this kind of Dark Souls style of game, but kind of taken back a level and really quite a condensed experience, I guess I'd say, in a more narrative-focused kind of abstract world.
Was that the cel-shaded game, Ashen?
I guess you could describe the art style that way, but yeah, not in a Borderlands style cel shaded, more in a kind of simplistic monochromatic visual kind of way. You're probably thinking the same one. And I remember when that game was approaching its release date, and what ended up happening is it went from this kind of standard release format, and they kind of scrapped that, and instead they subscribed to an Epic exclusivity deal, and then they made a deal with Microsoft to sell their game as part of their Games for Gold program. And so all of a sudden, this game that was intended to be sold to customers and make money based on how many customers bought it was now instead being sold to both Microsoft and Epic so that they could boast that they have this game on their platform or using their service. So it no longer mattered how many customers bought this game. In fact, customers are way less likely to buy the game now because A, it's free if you're an Xbox owner and pay for the gold subscription, which you will if you're playing online.
Yeah.
And B, on the PC storefront, obviously you're more likely to sell your game if you're on multiple platform distributors. And you're way less likely to sell your game if you're on that one storefront that nobody likes.
Yeah.
So obviously, they're no longer trying to sell their game to customers. They're just selling their game to companies.
Yeah.
And the landscape of game development kind of changed forever, for me, in my mind, from that moment. And now we keep hearing, you know, all these stories from like the Ublitz developer or whatever, where they're like, well, Epic offers us a minimum sales kind of deal. Which means that we never fail.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how many people buy or play our game. We don't fail. Epic just takes that cut and loses that money. And now the whole kind of landscape has changed. Isn't that crazy?
It's ridiculous. I feel like in the olden days of maybe 8, 9 years ago, there was this understanding of, there was indie games and there were the huge AAA publishers. And now that gray area between those two levels is just becoming more and more defined, more and more structured. And I think both as consumers and developers, nobody's really sure how to I feel like that range needs to be better defined now because it's not just indies and AAAs anymore. There's just so much more going on in the middle.
How do you define it? How do you define that middle?
Yeah, how do you?
It's almost impossible. But yeah, it used to be a time where success, there was games like take Braid or something like that, right? It was part of that first indie boom where it was hey, we've put our heart and soul into a game. We release game. Oh my God, people love it. It's crazy successful. Yeah. Here's all this money coming in. Okay, now we can do something really cool. And then they made The Witness, right? Mm-hmm. And them as a studio are kind of set, right? They still have, you know, this revenue coming in because people know them. They know their name. They've sold well off the back of Prey.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that happens in the future because I just mentioned minimum game sales, this deal that Epic offers, but nobody's talking about maximum game sales, right? Maximum game sales is the theory, right? It's everybody's dream. It's, hey, I'm this one indie game developer working by myself. I think my game is awesome. Oh my God, the world thinks it's awesome. I'm super rich, right? It's this dream that probably doesn't come true for many people, but it's still a dream. But as soon as you start selling to companies and not selling to customers, that maximum impact that you might have had in the industry is gone. Yeah. Who knows? Ooblets might have been the biggest thing. It might have been the next Minecraft, but instead it turns into a game that is being sold safely rather than taking the risk.
Minecraft. Used to be an indie game.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it still is, right?
I guess so.
Well, no, it's owned by Microsoft now. Yeah. Right? It's kind of mind-blowing to think. And I don't want people to, like, hear me and view me as being cynical here, because I'm actually not trying to say it's a bad thing. Stability in a kind of volatile marketplace, obviously a great thing. And I can never blame a developer, especially an indie developer, for taking that path and going the path of stability. But it raises all these questions about, well, what could have been? Like, in a different world, had this game released and not been sold to, you know, publishers and crowd funders and platform holders and these services that are being run by platform holders, if they weren't being sold to these things, like, what could have happened? Would it have been lost to the sea of games, or would it have stood out as something particularly spectacular and changed the landscape of gaming? We don't know.
Or would it have just made a, was it, would it just be a drop in the ocean
and
got forgotten about immediately?
It could have. But I guess, as a final thoughts, for me personally, I don't know what is ethical here. I don't know what is the ideal solution for moving forward. I think there's a lot of dilution in the way some games are being sold now that is really unfortunate, but if it leads to stability, then I get why it's happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, long gone are the days where your game was your game and everything is riding on your success and the way you can sell your game, because now it's not, like, that game has changed.
Yeah. It's become so much more volatile and so much harder for, like, smaller voices to be heard, smaller, you know, developers. And I do think that when it's become that difficult, and when it is such an unknown, like, we don't know how the market's going to change in the future, whether it's going to be this system currently, I think I can definitely understand people getting all the help they can get when they can get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100% agree. Anyway, that is all the time we have. We've been talking about crowdfunding and publishers and how you get your money and how games are sold now. It's been a bit of it's a deep topic, and it's capitalism, something we could tackle for way longer, but we're going to have to call it there. Pedro, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
My name has been Elliot, and make sure you join us for the next Intimates next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.